Yeah, you know I'm about due for one. I'm about due for a rant. So now this whole Trump and Epstein thing. Now they trying to make Trump look like he's the hero. This is how you know this stuff is all made up. Now they're trying to make Trump look like he's the hero and all this, that he's the one that snitched on Jeffrey Epstein. Never mind the videos that we've seen of him obviously pointing out girls that they wanted to hit on. Like it's like cringe. Like, you know how you see frat boys or even yourself back in the day when you would go to the club and you would point out girls or which girl you want to talk to or which girl was eyeing you and all that. That's basically what they were doing when you see that very first early video of them two together at a party. They want you to believe that now Trump wants the files released after going through his first presidency and not ever mentioning Jeffrey Epstein to now mentioning him and say, okay, release the Epstein files. That's how you know it's all managed. They're never going to tell you any truth. That's why they need Marjorie Taylor Greene, Candace Owens, and all these little minions in the Republican Party to keep narratives and storylines going. You trying to tell me of all people in the government, all the congressmen, all the senators, all the House of Reps, that you keep hearing the same simple-minded ass people. You keep seeing Marjorie Taylor Greene. It's like they get one celebrity, one politician, and they just run with it. That don't seem kind of odd to y'all? Out of all the politicians that we have across this country from their respective states, they keep picking the same exact ones over and over again. And you know, when as soon as they start talking about Islam and bringing up Muslims, you know they're going right to that girl, Iman or Moore or whatever her name is, the chick from, I get what she was, she's from Minnesota or Detroit or whatever, somewhere up north. You know they're gonna come out with the same people. AOC is gonna come out. It's still gonna be the same people. It's like a political reality show that you didn't even sign up to watch, but you just somehow forced to watch it because you somewhat have to watch to see what's going on, just to know where we are in scripture. But I think it's laughable, and people are eating it up. And somehow they slipped in the fact that Donald Trump went down on Bill Clinton. That is just such an odd thing to bring out. I mean, it don't matter that they have these emails. It's easy to forge those emails. All you need is a piece of paper, and then you need to know what decade or what year that emails were being sent through a particular font, and just mimic the font and come out whatever story you want, and people will eat it up. No one's validating or finding the proper credentials to even say that these are emails or not. They're not giving you no IP address. You don't know what computer this came from, but people eat it up because they need a storyline. They need a narrative. It's like WWE. It's like wrestling. They need a narrative to follow along and to make it believable because people want so desperately to believe in drama. It's just like a big ass high school. That's all it is. It's a big ass high school next to a plantation, next to a strip mall. That's all America is. That's literally it's all it is. Everyone don't even act like adults anymore. They act like children. Repressed teenage children. That's how they act. That's how people think. Emotionally too. Emotionally and mentally, people think and act like children, teenagers, adolescents. Like they have just hit their second puberty. Because there ain't nowhere in the world that people really be believing this mess. And they've always they roll out, and they've always done this, they'll roll out again these survivors. So now when you look at these survivors, you don't look at them as pubescent children. You don't look at them as teenagers or being ever teenagers. You look at them as grown women, which is why they manage these victims and they say when they can come out and tell their story. And these victims so stupid, they're like, oh, okay, we'll wait 40 years to now I'm gonna get my justice. And by that time, we're looking at a 40 to 50-year-old woman, and it's not gonna hit the same. It's not going to hit the same to those you want to want to believe that this man was a pedophile. Now, mind you, we've seen two or three pictures of one girl was this Virginia Guilfoyle, whatever her name is, that supposedly killed or committed suicide, whatever. But now they moved her out of the spotlight. But you trying to tell me over almost a decade of human trafficking being on and off those planes that they only had but two pictures or three pictures of the same girl? I guarantee you the girls that have been successful pandering to those people, those politicians and those celebrities that they pandered to sexually, I guarantee you they're in a better place. They don't have to come out. The ones that you're seeing are the ones that got maybe a crappy deal, that didn't want to do it anymore, and now they want to tell their story. Because usually, if you're in that society long enough and you grow up out of it, you become somewhat in high places or high offices because you can keep a secret. You can keep your mouth shut. Those people are probably having like political jobs that you don't even know of. They probably raise these people up to be politicians you don't even hear or see. These people are going to be living in the Maldives and just being handlers of other teenage girls and trying to get other girls involved in the same trade. You don't know that. But it's laughable to me how much they need this storyline, this Jeffrey Epstein storyline. This nation is cooked. And right now you're seeing a slight resurgence of this nationalist pride that they have because they know it's slipping away from them. Now they so worried about this New York mayor being Muslim, and somehow they believe that Sharia law is going to just pop up and be the new law. What they need to be worried about is the Noahide laws and the Talmudic Jews who are looking to use them as a sacrificial offering on the fire of foolishness. That's what they should be worried about. But again, they only worried about what is different from their skin tone, period. That's the only thing they're worried about. And the reason why they can't say anything against Jews is because they're scared. They don't want to get labeled as anti-Semitic, and they don't want that label to follow them all through their work life. They don't want that image. They don't want that label because they think for some reason people are not going to hire you because you're an anti-Semite. That somehow you're going to lose your house, lose your car, lose your relationship, lose your wife or husband or your children, all because they framed you as an anti-Semite. Even though they have made executive orders and laws about anti-Semitism, I have not seen not one person go into a courtroom to defend themselves against the label of anti-Semitic crimes or anti-Semitism. I have not seen it. Not saying that they won't do it. I'm just saying I haven't seen it yet. So it would make sense to me. You might as well get it out of your system now. You might as well try that system now. That's how I see it. I mean, my Wikipedia page, when I started talking big noise on X or Twitter, that they tried to frame me as anti-Semitic, and they changed my Wikipedia page to have an all-time, oh, he's anti-Semitic. He posted this about anti-Semitism. He posted this quote by, and I was using the quote by a Jew. I think his name is Harold Rosenthal or something like that, and he talked about how the Jews, their God is Satan. And we are their children. That's something he said. And I just posted what he said. And then they try to make me seem like I'm an anti-Semite because I'm using their people's words. And that's what I was doing. I was using their words against themselves. So I thought it was laughable. I think all of this is laughable. And it truly is when the Most High says, cause a stupor to seize the inhabitants of this world. You can truly see it. Like Nicki Minaj speaking at the United Nations. They don't even make sense. Nicki Minaj speaking at the United Nations about the Nigerian Christian massacre. Mind you, when Mike Walsh did a video with her, the video, for one, it was blurry. And she looked so uncomfortable. These people are so confident when they walk into the booth. They so confident when they do these music videos. They so confident when they talk crap. They so confident when they write these rhymes. But you get them in an environment that is outside their jurisdiction, these people sound and look dumb. They look dumbfounded as well, as if they don't know what's going on. They so insecure with themselves, but they project confidence and self-esteem, but they do not have it if you take them out of a certain arena. That's why it was laughable when I saw Mike Walls try to big up Nicki Minaj, and she couldn't say anything intelligent. The speech that she said, yeah, it was written down and she had to read from it, but when he had to put her on the spot to give us like some encouraging words or some thanks of why she was chosen, she looked so out of place and didn't know what to say and didn't know what to do, was mumbling and bumbling her words. And these people are supposed to be calling themselves queen and the goddesses. And like, these people are garbage. Garbage. I think it's laughable. It truly is that these people exude confidence, sexuality, power, God-type behavior, and then you put them in an environment where they have to speak for themselves, when they don't get to cuss, they don't get to shake their ass, and they don't get to say all types of weirdness, then you see them act like church mouse or church mice. I got a question for you Israelite men. Do any of y'all suffer from lower back pain or just back pain in general? I would like to take a poll of how many Israelite men out there are suffering through back pain. Because they tell me that back pain is hereditary. My father told me that his uncle on his father's side had really bad back pain where he was bending over all the time, and which made his daughter, she had back pain. My father has back pain. My uncle has back pain. My sister, she had like slight scoliosis. I have lower back pain now. My daughter, I just found out that she has a slight case of scoliosis. So it's like, they tell me like back pain is hereditary. And I'm thinking, where did it come from? Our backs couldn't be this messed up in our entire lives, through our entire generations, for no cause. Just like we don't get high blood pressure and things that are messing with us, with our bloods before we came out the womb. It just don't come from nowhere. But from us eating, for 400 years, eating unclean foods has destroyed our bloodstream and destroyed our blood so much that we are in danger of high cholesterol before we even reach 20. I remember I took my daughter to the doctors for a checkup when she was like 7 or 8. And they said like her cholesterol was really high. I'm like, how? She eats healthy. But it's what's in our bloodstream. I went to the doctors to get a checkup recently. They said, oh yeah, you're high, you got a high cholesterol count. Your number is high. I'm like, I eat healthy or I barely eat, but I don't even eat 3 meals a day. I eat maybe 1 or 2. And most of that is fruit. So how is my cholesterol so high? So you're like, well, you know, for African Americans, this is, and I'm telling you, this is the generational curses, not just spiritually, but physically, that destroys our bloodstream and destroys our bones. So going back to the whole lower back pain and back pain thing, do you think that it came from years of bondage, years of getting our backs broke, years of being whipped, years of being lynched, stretched, broken, torn between two horses? Like, over time, you would think that would work itself into our ruachs, into our souls, into our bloodstreams, and eventually into our bones. This is how we know that the Most High is not playing when it comes to punishing us. This is how you know the Most High is not playing when it came to those curses. We would shout, like scripture says, we shall remember ourselves. We are remembering every single day when we get older. Truly, when we get older. I would like to think it was playing football is the reason why I had lower back pain. But the way I've been hearing it from my father is like, it's hereditary. So I would like to know if any Israelite men are suffering from lower back pain or back pain, or have a history in your bloodline of men in your family having back pain. Because I know it had to be carried down from bondage and slavery. Moving on from that. I had another question too. When it says that we will not be married or being given in marriage in heaven. Now, does that mean your wife should be loyal enough to stick around? Ask your wife this. If you're a wife and you have a husband and he doesn't listen to the show, ask your husband this. It says that we will not be married or given into marriage in heaven. So will you leave me to just go anywhere you want in the kingdom of heaven? Now, mind you, the kingdom of heaven is very, very big. I haven't been there, but I'm assuming that it's spacious. Like, it's a lot of places you can go, no boundaries. It's a lot of people. Well, it's going to be people up there that we have never seen before. Maybe some that we have seen before and maybe never met as well. And so if we're all supposed to be of one people worshiping and praising, will your significant other always be by your side, even though when they don't have to be? I'm going to ask my wife this too and see what she says. I would really like to know that. I mean, you don't have to be close to me. You don't have to be next to me. You don't have to check into me. But we spent all this time actually preparing, working, praising, worshiping the Most High to get to that point. And now when we get to that point, are we not just one flesh anymore? Are we just now two strangers in the kingdom? Or two people that know each other? If we have children, do our children just run them up, go anywhere they want? Are we not a family anymore? Like, I really want to know. Like, what's the rules in heaven when it comes to relationships? If we're not married or given in marriage? If we want to just hang out with somebody else for a long period of time, are we allowed to just hang out with that person? Even if they are the opposite sex? Are we allowed to form new relationships? Are we cutting our wives or our husbands off of our flesh as soon as we get to heaven? Is what I'm really saying. That's what I think about now. Not saying I'm automatically going to be in heaven. I would like to think I'm going to be or qualified to be, but that is something I not stress or worry about, but it's something I would definitely like to know, especially since we only have but dreams and visions and a little bit of words about what the kingdom is going to be like in scripture. But I'm at the point, or I'm getting at the point of feeling how Paul felt in Philippians, in 1 Philippians 20 through 30. It says, according to my earnest expectation and my hope that in nothing I shall be ashamed, but that with all boldness, as always, so now also Mashiach shall be magnified in my body, whether it be life or by death. For to me to live is Mashiach, and to die is gain. But if I live in the flesh, this is the fruit of my labor. Yet what I shall choose, I know not. That's like in the middle of doing the work for Yah, living righteously, teaching, being upright, suffering, and at the point where I'm ready to go. Like, I feel like I suffered enough. I've done enough. I'm ready to go. I'm not saying you get to a point of exhaustion. It's being exhausted with this world. Like, after you've seen and you feel like you've done enough, even when you can never do enough to repay the grace and long-suffering of the Most High Yahuwah, but it comes a time that even you become fatigued in yourself, in Ruach, where you feel like, I'm ready to go now. I feel like if I come to a situation or opportunity where I can go and leave and be with the Mashiach, I could be confident and say, yes, I feel like I fought the good fight. Now, you can't think this way if you had just finished sinning the day before. You can't think this way if you're still battling demons. You can't think this way if you feel like you haven't accomplished feast days. You can't be that confident. But what Paul is saying is he's so confident that it doesn't matter which way it'll go. It's almost like he preferred to die, because then he can rest and he knows where his soul is going to eventually be. But he's also saying that if I have life, that this is my reward. But through the long-suffering mercy, I can still win souls for the kingdom. He says, for I am in a strait betwixt two, having desire to depart and to be with Mashiach, which is far better. Nevertheless, to abide in the flesh is more needful for you, not even for himself. He's saying, I'm only here for you. I think of that line in Jerry Maguire that Tom Cruise said to Cuba Gooding. He said, I am up here for you. He said, you don't know what it's like to be me out here for you. It's an up and down, pride swallowing siege that I would not fully tell you about. I feel like that's how Paul was feeling. Like, Paul felt like, I'm at my wit's end of what I'm trying to do here, but I'm only here for you. And having this confidence, I know that I shall abide and continue with you all for your furtherance and joy of faith, that your rejoicing may be more abundant in Yahushua HaMashiach for me by my coming to you again. So that's still caught between two worlds. If I die, I go see Mashiach. If I live, I help win you to Mashiach, which is also a gain for me. Only let your conversation be as it becomes the Basura of Mashiach, that whether I come and see you or else be absent, I may hear of your affairs, that ye stand fast in one Ruach, with one mind, striving together for the faith of the Basura, and in nothing terrified by your adversaries, which is to them an evident token of perdition, but to you of Yeshua and that of Elohim. That part is powerful. Be not terrified of your adversaries. They are your adversaries for a reason. And he says it's an evident token or an evident sign that they are the children of perdition, but they are there to try you, to purge you, to clean you, to sharpen you. Where would we be if we didn't have adversaries? How powerful would the testimony of Yahushua be without the adversaries? How would we know Yah if we didn't have Satan as an adversary? But you don't need to be terrified. If Satan will flee from you after only three dismisses of him, how powerful are the adversaries in your life? Shouldn't they fall under the same doctrine, the same mentality, the same programming, if they are attached to the world that Satan has created? For unto you it is given on the behalf of Mashiach, not only to believe on him, but also to suffer for his sake. You know the reason why he suffered so hard? So we can look at that as like, all right, if I just suffer half of that, I'm confident I can make it. If I suffer just a little bit, I'm confident I can pull through. No man has suffered like Yahushua. Mind you, it's been some runner-ups. Like I mentioned before of George Stimmy, the 14-year-old child that was electrocuted. But even he didn't have to carry a cross. Even he didn't have thorns pressed into his head and beaten to his body. Even he didn't get scourged with whips where they pulled the flesh off his bones. Even he didn't have to go through that. Not even Emmett Till went through that. And this is the only people I know that actually took a real beating. Not anyone lynched or hung has taken a repetitive beating over a period of time other than Yahusha. Mind you, we may not even have to go through what Yahusha went through. But if we suffer just a little bit for righteousness' sake, then that is the power of Yahuwah's Yeshua. Having the same conflict which he saw in me, now here to be in me. That conflict of not really caring if you live or die, because you know this world is completely controlled and managed by certain entities, principalities. So it's like it doesn't give you that same vigor of life. It doesn't give you that same excitement, because now you come to a point where you know everything is managed. So you get tired of this world. You get bored of it. Nothing is going to surprise you. I would have thought that finding out, even if it's a lie or not, finding out that Donald Trump sucked off Bill Clinton, that didn't even surprise me, because you know the doctrine of Freemasonry. It is a phallic-worshipping cult. If they worship the phallus, that means they gotta be gay. Now, mind you, I can't picture it. I don't want to picture it. But the reason why they put this in front of people who say they are conservative Christians' faces, that regardless if you deny it or think it's a possibility, it's still an image in your mind. And then we all know that the Antichrist will be homosexual. Oh, he's saying that he won't want women. That's what it says in Daniel. He won't want women. So if you don't want women, I don't know what that is if it ain't gay. Maybe they ain't what they didn't call it gay back then or call it homosexuality. They called them dogs. That's what they called them. They called them dogs. But Daniel didn't use that term. He just said he won't want women. So they have to prepare people who say they're conservative Christians, that their values are against homosexuality. They have to keep slipping in examples, slipping in psyops and rituals, programming to get you to believe that it could be a possibility, to lower your expectations on heterosexuality, especially when it's supposedly tied in with the Republican Party. It's supposed to be the party of being conservative, upright, standing Christians, where man and woman belong together and never man and man. So this is why they have Nick Fuentes and the other guy, Milo. Both of them are gay. Both of them are gay. If you look through Nick Fuentes' history and how close it is to other gays and pedophilia and all that, he's gay. He's a closet homosexual. They have to give you characters, or what you believe is masculinity, they have to give you characters to soften the approach that the Antichrist is going to take over. It don't matter if you're Democratic or Republican, you'll be able to accept the Antichrist, because that is why they are lowering the bar on masculinity. They want you to accept what this leader will be. And now, like I said before, multiple times on this podcast, that anytime I talk about something in the previous episode, the Most High Yah is so amazing with me when he guides me. He always sends me back to where something I need to be confirmed in, or something that I speak about or I don't know about. He always points me into that direction. And that direction was about the oaths, when a brother asked about the seven oaths. Now, I'm not saying that this is the answer, but I'm just showing you this is where the Most High has led me. But I want to start off when I was reading Enoch 68. It was talking about the angels and how they were going to be punished. Enoch 68, verses 1 through 5. It says, after this, He gave me the characteristic marks of all secret things in the sefer of my great-grandfather Enoch. This is Noah talking. And in the parables which had been given to him, inserting them for me among the words of the sefer of parables. I wish we could have that book. The sefer of parables. Man, you can't imagine how much knowledge it must have been to have a whole entire sefer of parables by Enoch, written by Enoch at the time where angels were descending upon mankind. At that time, Holy Michael answered and said to Raphael, "The power of the Ruach hurries me away and impels me on. The severity of the judgment of the secret judgment of the angels, who is capable of endurance of that severe judgment which has taken place and been made permanent without being melted at the sight of it." Now, mind you, we think of punishment for us as just being somewhere burned hotly forever and ever. Just in burning in a pool of lava, hot flames, 500 to 1,000 degrees Celsius, and just be burning forever. No water, not even a break from the torture or torment, just forever burning. That's what we know as extreme punishment. Can you even fathom in your mind when it comes to angels and how great their power is, how great their wisdom is, how great their stature is, that what would be so horrific as a punishment that it would cause Michael to be so scared of this place that the Ruach would move him away from it. Like, you know how you get scared? Like, say you on the 100th floor or anywhere you're on a balcony or something, and you peek over and you're on a very high building, and you peek over and that Ruach gets you to get scared and like, no, let me push myself back. That's what it must have felt with whatever Michael saw. He said, again, Holy Michael answered and said to Holy Raphael, "Who is there whose heart is not softened by it and whose mind is not troubled at this thing? Judgment has gone forth against them by those who have thus dragged them away. And that was when they stood in the presence of Yahuwah Sabaoth. In like manner, also, Holy Raphael said to Raphael, "They shall not be before the eye of Yahuwah, since Yahuwah Sabaoth has been offended with them, for like gods have they conducted themselves. Therefore will he bring upon them a secret judgment forever and ever. For neither shall angel nor man receive a portion of it, but they alone shall receive their own judgment forever and ever." And these were the angels who made a pact to descend on mankind, marrying the women, and in teaching them all the secret things that they've learned in heaven. There's a specific, special type of judgment for them. And we only know of burning in hot lava or burning in hot fire. What could be so horrific as an angel? Like, are you just getting plucked apart slowly but surely? Like, you wouldn't think angels would feel pain. Especially when they can't die. They don't have a soul or a ruach to die. They don't have flesh that die. They're angelic beings. They were made to live forever. So forever and ever, they're going to be tormented, a specific type of torment that would make other angels, even the archangels, scared of it. I couldn't even imagine it. Low key, these are the things I need to ask y'all, or I would like to see for myself. And I'm not going to see it being on the other side of it. I definitely don't want to see it from the other side. It's almost out of curiosity that I chase after righteousness. It's almost out of spite as well. I would never want to spend eternity with people I don't even like in this world. That should be enough power for you to turn from your wickedness if you can't find the power within yourselves from Yah. That should be something that urges you on. Some of you came into this walk because you were spiteful. Spiteful meaning once you were already kicked out from this world or kicked out of your friends group, out of spite, you were like, you know what? I'm going to be so righteous and upright. I'm going to make them wish they didn't kick me out of their friends group. And you just stuck with it. You just kept worshiping, praising Yah. Some of you came into this walk. Some of you were chosen to come into this walk only because you had a spiteful spirit. It just needed to be redirected to where it would do you some good. Like for me, for instance, I was somebody who likes to prove people wrong. That's how my father raised me. He raised me with negative reinforcement. Negative reinforcement means telling you what you're not going to be or what you're not going to do, and then you end up proving people wrong and telling them, and you do it the positive way. Like my father used to tell me, if you don't get your grades up, you're going to be at a community college. That's where you're going to be at. You're going to be a joke in a community college. Out of spite, I worked my butt off to make sure I had the SAT scores to get into the university I wanted to get into so I could play sports the way I wanted to play sports and not play at a community college. That's how my father raised me. Through negative reinforcement. Some people fold. Some people will break. You know, some people will buckle under pressure when somebody tell you, you ain't going to be this, you ain't going to be that, or you ain't going to be doing this. Some people fold. I was just not one of those. I wasn't one of those people. I was like, all right, bet. So I know Yah was like, all right, I know exactly how to get him. I'm going to make this world hate him. I'm going to make him embarrassed. And then he's going to come to me and he's going to like, all right, now I'm going to be spiteful and turn myself against this world and go hard at it. It's got to be how Yah wrote this program, wrote my playbook. I guarantee you he probably wrote some of y'all who are the most obscene rebels in this world before you met Yah. I guarantee you this is the reason why Yah went after you. This is why it says in scripture that he goes after the lost. Yahushua said he would go after the lost sheep. It ain't because we lost because we want to be lost. We lost because we don't know how to find our way. We didn't know how to use our abilities, our gifts, our ruach, and aim it in the proper direction. That's what lost means. Lost don't mean you intentionally going out of your way after knowing the truth, going out of your way to be an ass. That's not what lost means. Lost means you don't know who you are. You don't know why you feel the way you feel. And you don't know what you can do about how you feel to turn it into a positive direction. So some of you are ex-rebels. I guarantee you are a rebel for Yah. I guarantee you go out there hard body, talking the truth, speaking the truth, and you don't care what nobody say about you. You don't even care if they bring up your past. You don't care about the little incidents when you slip. You don't care. You know where you need to be, and you aim in that direction, and you have not turned back since. So I guarantee you, that's exactly the path you guys are on. Now, to speak about the oath, what this brother laid out for me about the swearing of the seven oaths. And I said that it didn't make sense to me why Yah would just be a speaker of words and just phrases and catchphrases. He doesn't strike me as somebody who would say a catchphrase and not having anything to back it up or direct, have anywhere in scripture where, okay, this is why he said this and this is why he meant it. So I walk right into Enoch 69 after reading about the angels, and it talks about this oath. Its name is Becca. That's Enoch 69, 20 through 36. Its name is Becca. He spoke to Holy Machiel to discover to them the sacred name that they might understand that secret name and thus remember the oath, and that those who pointed out every secret thing to the children of men might tremble at that name and oath. Let me stop. Do y'all understand how powerful that man is up there? That just a word, a word can make these angels, these superior beings to us, tremble at this one word, at this one oath and what it means. That they might understand that secret name and thus remember the oath, and that those who point out every secret thing to the children of men might tremble at that name and oath. This is the power of that oath. For powerful it is and strong. And he established this oath of Achai by the instrumentality of the holy Machiel. These are the secrets of this oath, and by it were they confirmed. Let me stop there. Do you feel like the archangel Michael kind of took the place of Satan, that even though he's not a cherubim, that somehow Michael was like that guy after Satan was left? Because he was the one that kicked Satan out. He was also the one that fought with Satan over Moshe's body. And Satan didn't even fight against Michael. Satan's a cherubim, a powerful cherubim. And he didn't even go to war with Michael over Moshe's body. He just said, get from me. He didn't need to say it three times. He said it once. And Satan left. Now, mind you, after you get your ass kicked once, why you want another ass whipping? So if Yah gave Michael specifically the power to kick Satan and his angels out of heaven, it's almost like Michael got a little promotion. Man, I need to get to heaven, man. I need to have these conversations. Only because I love war, these battles, these spiritual battles so much. I have questions that I need to answer, and I ain't going to get answered if I go to hell. I got to go to heaven so I can sit down and have a sit down with these people. I have to have a 30 for 30 conversation with all these angels at the time of these battles, just to see what they were thinking and how they felt during these battles. These are the secrets of this oath, and by it were they confirmed. Heaven was suspended by it before the world was made forever. Okay? That's one oath. That's one meaning. Heaven was suspended by this oath. By it has the earth been founded upon the flood, while from the concealed parts of the hills, the agitated waters proceeded forth from the creation to the end of the world. Okay, so heaven was suspended. That's one oath. By this oath, the sea has been formed and the foundation of it. Okay, that's two. By this oath, the sea has been formed and the foundation of it. During the period of its fury, he established the sand against it, which continues unchanged forever. And by this oath, the abyss has been made strong, nor is it removable from its station forever and ever. Are we counting that as three? Okay, so we got the sea being formed in the abyss. So that's three. By this oath, the sun and moon complete their progress, never swerving from the command to them forever and ever. That's four. By this oath, the stars complete their progress, and when their names are called, they return and answer forever and ever. By this oath, stars, so that's five. Thus the heavens have the blowing of the winds, all of them have ruach and are a complete combination of breathings. There the treasures of thunder are kept and the splendor of the lightning. There are kept the treasures of hail and of frost, the treasures of snow, the treasures of rain and of dew. All of these confess and law before Yahuwah Sabaoth. They glorify with all their power of praise, and he sustains them in all thanksgiving while they laud, glorify, and exalt the name of Yahuwah Sabaoth forever and ever. And with them, he establishes this oath by which they and their paths are preserved, nor does their progress perish. So it's somewhere that's six and seven if you're going to count the wind and then the thundering and lightning as one thing, seven. Or if you're counting the wind, the thunder and lightning as six, and then the hail and frost and the treasures of rain and dew is seven. I don't know. You could. I guess that's where you could see swear seven oaths. So he's saying, I swear seven oaths by the entire creation that I created, this entire world that I formed, that I will do this. by all the creation that I've created, by this entire universe that I've created for you, I swear to this, that it will never change, so I will not change. So it says that he establishes this oath by which they and their paths are preserved, nor does their progress perish. They glorify with all their power of praise, and he sustains them in all thanksgiving. While they laud and glorify and exalt the name of Yahuwah Sabaoth forever and ever. This is much like we. We are his creation. So if he swears seven oaths to us, he's saying he's loyal to us. He will establish us. Our paths are preserved before him. Our progress do not perish if we continue in his path, if we continue in his Torah. The Most High said, he will sustain us in all thanksgiving. That's what he's basically saying. If the luminaries, other than the stars that he had to jail because they transgressed his commandment, which is mentioned in Enoch, there are some stars that did not do their prospective duty, and he jailed them. Enoch talks about this, like, who is these stars over here? Like, why are they over here? Because, oh, they transgressed the Most High's commandment, and they're in jail for it. So every living thing has its mind of its own. Every living thing has a ruach. Things that we don't see or things we take advantage of. We know trees, grass grows, and we know it's a living thing. But the sky, the weather, all those have ruachs. Fire, all of it has ruach. And it's obedient to the Most High's will. The Most High says to fire, I want it to be fire. It don't turn to ice. If the Most High said, I want this river to freeze over, it freezes over. It doesn't turn to fire. If the Most High says, I want it to rain, it doesn't stay dry. If the Most High says, I want it to thunder, it doesn't lightning. If the Most High say, I want it to lightning, it doesn't thunder. Everything has a respective obedience to the Most High. So if you're obedient to his will, if you're obedient to his statutes, he will sustain you. He will not allow your progress to perish, even though if you fall and slip, because obviously we are man. We are not Ruach. We have flesh. We have body. And we're now coming into his knowledge. And the more we come into his knowledge, which is to the point of what Paul was saying, you're on autopilot. It doesn't matter if you live or die because that power is through Yah. He will sustain us until it's time for us to be glorified or to receive our glorified bodies. That has nothing to do with your enemies. It has nothing to do with your friends. It has nothing to do with the opportunities or the pitfalls or snares of the enemy. It has nothing to do with them. It has to do with how you progress in his Torah. Man, thank you, my brother, for actually pointing that out and asking me about swore seven oaths. Because now it makes sense. Now it makes things. I think Yahuwah for the Ruach Chokmah and the Ruach Binyah, wisdom and understanding to finally understand why he would say swear seven oaths and then go on to pronouncing what he's going to do. Because his word does not falter. His word, as he said, does not return in void. He has sent it to do what he expects it to do. So if he planted us in due season, and he water us in due season, and we sprout up in due season, don't you think he sustains us so that we can produce fruit? And if you are not producing fruit, and if you do not come up in due season, what has he said? That he will count you as the tare. That he will not, he says this, and he will not stop his seasons from progressing because you do not come up in your due season. You need to find it in yourself when it's your time. In your season, do you produce fruit? You should feel that by now in your Ruach. You should know, whenever you get comfortable with the word and you get confident in his word, which is what you need most times is the confidence. Once you find confidence in the Ruach, that is your season to start producing fruit. You can't be anymore, oh, I'm scared. I don't know how this is going to make me look. I'm scared of how this is going to make me feel when I'm in family and from family and friends, or what I say online, if that's going to come back on me and that's going to be added to the group chat or the family group chat or the friends group chat. And now I'm embarrassed because I've pronounced how I love and worship the Most High. And this is what I do on this particular day or this particular month or this particular feast day. That it can't be no more of that. When it's your time, in due season, to produce fruit, you need to produce it in your season. Because when that fruit is ripe, that is when the abundance comes. That is when you are prepared to receive the blessings. And as he said it best before, if you come back to him, or if you return to him and he'll return unto you, then he will open the storehouses of heaven and pour out a blessing that you won't have any room to fill it, any room to store it. That is what he says in Malachi, if you want to look that up. So when the Most High says that he swore seven oaths, I understand it now. I understand it now. We don't serve any master. We don't serve any God. We don't serve any entity that will be any more loyal than him, any more honest, any more trustworthy, any more loving, merciful, and graceful than him. And he has provided an example through his son. If you realize he didn't even have to do that. Truly, if he didn't care for us, he'd be like, all right, it don't matter. I'll just pick from people who get it, and I'll pick from those who can get it without having an example or a real life example. I could just pick from them. He would be satisfied. The Most High truly don't need us up there. I think y'all forgetting this. He don't truly need us up there. If he wanted to, he could have kept remaking Adam and Eve until he got it right. If he wanted to. Mind you, he didn't even have to give us Yahusha. He could have said, okay, these are the Israelites that actually did it well before there was a Yahusha. And he could have been like, I'm done. Everybody else can just live this life and figure it out on your own. He could have truly did that to us. But the fact he gave flesh of his own flesh, blood of his own blood, into this world to suffer and have a short life so that he could reign forever to be an example and a testimony for us. So when we could get it right, when we find the nerve and the confidence to get it right, we would reach the point of Paul where we could be confident regardless of where this life leads us. If we go tomorrow, if we go next month, we are confident that we will be with Yahusha and Yahuwah, regardless of the outcome, regardless of the circumstance. We could be confident in death. There's people who will never be confident in death. They're not even confident in life. Read Ezra or 4th Ezra out of the Sefer, chapter 7 again. Read that again. You do not want to be the soul or souls. You don't want to be, or you don't want your household to be of those souls when they see and meet the Most High, not for a welcoming party, but him to show exactly who you denied and chose not to serve, and you wander this earth for 7 days before you go down into torment. That decision, that choice is on you. I feel like Yahusha and Yahuwah has done enough to sustain their word, sustain his word, and to give us examples over and over again and then give his own son as an example, as a testimony for us to give it a right, we truly have no excuse. You either want to do it or you don't want to do it. And there's really no excuse after that.